Michael Sam would be the first openly gay player in the NFL, says he knows there will be problems and they've already started. Several NFL officials telling Sports Illustrated it will hurt him on draft day because a gay player wouldn't be welcome in an NFL locker room. It would be uncomfortable because that's a man's world. You beat a woman and drag her down a flight of stairs, pulling her hair out by the roots, you're the fourth guy taken in the NFL draft. You kill people while driving drunk, that guy's welcome. You love another man, well, now you've gone too far.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Hi, everybody. How you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for tuning in. Great guest tonight, Mara Kiesling, Executive Director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, be joining us at the bottom of the hour. But before we get to that, we got plenty of stuff to talk about with Mara. But before we get to that, you know, this whole Michael Sam thing, I got to tell you, on the one hand, I admire his courage immensely. The strength and the courage and the personal fortitude that it has to take a guy like this to literally bet his career on acceptance in a notoriously homophobic industry. That takes a special kind of courage, I think. And, you know, on the one hand, I admire for him for his courage, and I think that's great. And yet, there's this unmistakable voice in the back of my head that says, are you an idiot? Why did you bet your career on this? Why didn't you sign first? Sign with an NFL team, collect your check, and then come out.
I think, Becky, I think it's because everybody knew. A lot of people knew, especially inside the game.
Well, that may be true, but, you know, I think about Chris Cluey, the kicker, who is out of work now once he voiced his support for gay marriage.
Yep.
I think about Jason Collins, the NBA player who basically his career ended when he came out as gay. This is not something that has a very good track record. And while I think I'm sure that you and I and everybody out there believes that this should not matter. And of course it should not matter. But the reality is this is very similar, at least in my experience. This is very similar to what happens when you're just an average working Joe or Jane and you're gay or transgender or something visible. In other words, you make yourself visible in some way, whether you are a trans person who is noticeably trans or you are a gay person who says, hey, I'm gay, a la Jason Collins and Michael Sam. You know, you are identifying yourself. And once that happens, I think a lot of the people in management, the players, your coworkers, in other words, are probably pretty okay with it, generally. It certainly was my experience that most of my coworkers, where the problems come in, is not in your coworkers, not in the people who are on the same level as you are. It's in the bosses. It's in your management staff. It's in your coaching staff. It's in the upper, you know, the ownership and the leadership and the management and those people. That's where LGBT people find themselves deprived of work. Okay, I can tell you stories over and over and over where my management, the people who are the managers who I work with every day, were totally fine with it. It was the district manager or some higher up in some other state in the headquarters in another state that decided, well, we don't need this. And the way they get rid of you when you're trans, and of course it's illegal to in New Jersey, not many other states, but in New Jersey, it's illegal to turn around and say, you know what, we don't want any trans people working for us. Get out, you're fired, goodbye. That's illegal. But it's still perfectly legal to say, you know what, we're cutting staff and, we don't need you anymore. Have a nice day. You know, or, we're having a layoff and, you're it. Have a nice day. Perfectly legal. There are so many ways to fire somebody because most states don't require a company to give a reason for firing you. They don't. You're not required to give a reason. The only way that you can really take advantage of anti-discrimination laws, and I can tell you, this is probably going to be true of ENDA, if and when it passes, as it is of our state law here in New Jersey, which I have personally tried to use and discovered this, and this is why I can talk about this, okay? Basically, what you have to do in order to take advantage of these laws is you have to be able to, as the accuser, as the plaintiff in the case, okay, you know, as the person making the accusation, it is incumbent upon you to provide the proof that the company discriminated. It is not required for the company to prove that they did not. Well, as most people discover when you're working, that's tough to prove. Because who are the witnesses? Other people who are dependent on this company for their paycheck. So all that they have to do is simply say, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't see anything. All right, leave me alone. I'm not involved. I don't want to know about it. That's what you get. And so the companies understand that basically, you know, unless you've got somebody who's so committed and such an activist that they're going to be willing to put their job on the line along with yours, which most times is not going to happen. Let's be honest. People have jobs. They have families to support. They're not going to do that. Honestly, I don't know that I would do that in the same situation. I mean, well, I'm a big mouth who gets into trouble with my mouth, so I might be a bad example. But generally speaking, you know, especially these days when jobs are as hard to come by as they are, most people are not just going to, like, you know, put themselves on the firing line because they feel something. Even if they say, you know, I don't like what's going on here, they're not going to speak out because it could put them in the same position. And a lot of times these companies have an attitude of, well, what do we give a shit? Fire this one, hire the next person who walks in the door. Who gives a shit? You know, one cashier is as good as another. One, you know, and that's really the attitude. Because, why? Because they can get away with it. Because it's so tough to use these anti-discrimination laws. It's so tough to win a case because it's so stacked against you as the plaintiff that, you know, in a lot of cases, people just can't pursue it. I mean, first of all, because, you know how much it costs in terms of real money to hire a lawyer to pursue something like this? Because most lawyers they're not going to take these things on contingency. They're going to want cash up front, which means that unless you're wealthy enough that you didn't need that job in the first place, you're probably not going to be able to afford to take advantage of these laws that are supposedly, theoretically, designed to protect you. But in reality, in practical application, what winds up happening is the way that the employment laws are written do not protect you. Even with these non-discrimination cases, they protect your employer.
Becky's life as a cyborg. You know, I hate to tell you this, Becky. I'm going to call you back. You're breaking up and you're beginning to sound like some kind of droid or something like that. We don't want that. So let's call you right back. Oh, dear. Here we go. Skype is a wondrous thing. Yeah.
How are we sounding now?
Could be better. Let's hear more.
Okay. Well, getting back to what I was saying here, and how am I sounding? Sounding okay, Mr. Mike?
Kind of crappy. Kind of like a cyborg again. Wonder what to do about that.
Shall I adjust something?
Oh, not necessarily. I don't think it has anything to do with the level. I think it has to do with Skype. So try this one more time. I'm going to call you right back there. Oh, dear me. This is rather an odd thing. You know, her weather is real bad there, so it could affect her connection.
Okay, I am here. How are we sounding now?
A few minor things.
Should maybe if I adjust the mic a little? Or?
No, you're just missing little pieces here and there. That's what Skype does when it's not happy.
Oh, boy.
Well, I say let's carry on the way it is. I'll just apologize to everybody out front here that if it sounds a little funky here for a while, and it could fix itself easily. Remember, the weather's real bad, of course, where you are.
And while you're doing that, I am going to turn off pretty much everything that I do not need.
Good.
Except for basically
Firefox, my mail program, Skype, and
12 other programs.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like I leave up certain things of course. Because I use them during the show.
Yeah, but you have
I leave up my mail program. I leave up my Facebook Instant Messenger. And by the way, you know, if you do want to send me a message while we are on the air, you can use Facebook Messenger. I do get it. Just look me up. Look up the account. Now, I want to remind people, and I should say this because I haven't mentioned this in a while. I used to have two Facebook accounts.
And you don't anymore. I know that's changed.
Well, the other one still exists. Uh-huh. I never shut it down.
And they didn't want people to have two accounts.
Right. But I use the one now. The way to find the correct one. Okay, because if you go to the wrong one, I don't update that one anymore. So I don't want people to sign up thinking that they're going to get my updates on my old account and then missing them because they're not subscribed to the new account. Mm-hmm. The new account, the username, in other words, the thing you put in at the very end of the Facebook address to identify the account is R Juro Show, just like our email address.
Mm-hmm.
rjuroshow@gmail.com. Well, this is just rjuroshow. Put that in and you will get my correct account.
Now, just to give you a little update, you're still sounding slightly ragged, but I think it is just a bit better than it was there before. So let's plunge forward. Here we go.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue plunging forward and hopefully we will be okay and our sound will be back up so that by the time Mara comes on in about 15 minutes or so, we will be sounding decent. But I appreciate you all hanging out for struggling along with us. I want to remind everybody also, we will not be doing a show on the 27th. Mr. Mike has some stuff going on, and I am actually leaving for Washington, D.C. the very next day. I'm getting on an Amtrak, heading down to D.C. for the convening. Which is a bunch of LGBT bloggers and journalists. I'm on the host committee this year. It's going to be great. A lot of cool people are going to be there. Very excited.
And we're actually switching Becky's program over to Live 365, where we started this about 7 years ago. Our audio streaming provider is going out of business. This has happened to us literally three times now. And so we've outlasted all of our streaming providers, and we're finally going back to where this show started. But we need a transitional week in order to make sure that I can run all of the little extra things that Live 365 requires. For the listeners, that's going to be totally transparent. If you go to www.q1.fm, you'll still get to where the stream is. So just put that in and you'll find us wherever we are. Cool, huh?
Yeah. But so that's the big news. So I will not be in town from the 28th to the 4th. I'm going to be there for the convening. I'll spend a couple days with Bill Browning and Jeremy Davis after that. And then I'll be back home. So that will be kind of cool. Very excited about that. But in the meantime, that means that, of course, we're not going to do a show on the 27th. We will be doing a show next week, however. Not sure who our guest will be, but, well, stay tuned for that. Who knows? I've actually got a few things in the works, and I'm hoping that we some of those things work out. You know me. I'm very hesitant to reveal people who I'm trying to get on the show because, well, frankly, certain ones of them, who shall remain like Chaz Bona or Nameless. Yeah. That's it. Nameless. Just don't seem very interested in engaging with the community media. They seem a little bit too interested in, you know, CNN and MSNBC. And, you know, they want to cast themselves as community advocates, which is great, and we certainly need them, and I don't fault them in any way for that. But, you know, if you want to speak for the community, it would be nice if you would also speak with the community. Call it a pet peeve, but, you know, I think if you're going to represent a persecuted minority, then probably one of the most basic things you could expect as an advocate is that you take time to actually speak for the people who speak with the people who you say you wish to represent. Janet Mock certainly understands that. It would be nice if these other emerging trans celebrities also would understand that as well. We've been very fortunate. Some very prominent folks in our community come on the show regularly. Mara, Dana Byer, who was on last week. You know, I feel very fortunate that folks will come on the show and talk to us. But, you know, I can't help but admit to a certain level of disappointment that somebody who's as significant as and who gave as amazing a speech at creating change, where she gave a shout out to trans media, which I thought was really cool. But, you know, I mean, I can't help it. I have to say, what good is a shout out to trans media at this big ass convention that you go to in Denver or wherever the hell it is, when you won't take 20 minutes to come on a trans radio show and speak directly with the community? I mean, I find that a little off-putting, shall we say. It's like, what, we're not good enough for you? I mean, can't sell enough books? What is it? I mean, you know, it's just, I'm miffed on behalf of my listeners. Because, no, I mean it. You know, I mean, it's annoying. Because
our digital bits are as good as anybody else's, so they can come on our show. Easy, right. I come on your show.
It just bothers me. It just annoys me, because I think, you know, I mean, this is the community. You want to speak for the community? Well, here's the community. Come and talk to the community, not just about the community. You know, what you think is important. But you know what? What we think is important too. And if you want to be a real advocate, if you really want to put yourself out there as the voice of transgender people, well, then you have to communicate with transgender people. I'm sorry, you can't not. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's not an advocate. It's not an advocate. That's not how an advocate works. An advocate speaks on behalf. Well, in order to speak on behalf, you have to speak with. How can you voice the interests and desires of a community you don't know? Just because you're a member does not mean you're qualified to represent us. And again, this is not an attack on Laverne Cox. It is not an attack on Jazz Bono. But it is an attack on their unwillingness, or that of their media people who they employ, to engage with the community. I think I think it's a little hypocritical. You know, I'm sorry, but you know, where is the community? The community is not at these big galas in Denver and GLAAD in New York and LA. That's not where the community is. I'm sorry. That's where the elites are. That's where the celebrities are. That's where the people with piles and piles of money are. The community? No. The community is over here. Community is over here. The people who are, you know, making that $7.25 an hour. The people who are struggling to get by. The people who really need to hear from these celebrities. The people who are really feeling the kind of oppression that these folks at these galas will never know, because they're so wealthy that it doesn't even impact them. If you want to speak for a community, you need to interact with the community. And that doesn't mean making speeches and creating change. And you know what? And I'm going to get myself into trouble here, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. What the hell? It doesn't mean only speaking at events for people of color. It's nice to have events for people of color. But I think these folks should remember how small a community we really are. How persecuted a community we really are. And I wonder if the folks that plan these color, you know, people of color events only, I wonder if they ever consider the other side of that. That while it may sound like everybody who does these things says, well, it's affirming for people of color. Yeah, you know what else it is? it's also a stop sign to everybody who's not a person of color that says, you're not welcome here. Think about that. Your community, the one that is desperate, the one that needs people speaking on their behalf more than any other, and the first thing that you do is you cut us, you divide us, you install artificial subdivisions that help no one. I still don't see. I mean, I am as affirming for racial and ethnic minorities as anyone else, but I don't see how dividing our community into itty-bitty little pieces based on race helps anybody. I'm sorry, I just don't. I'm sorry, I don't. We need everybody on the front lines and saying, you know, if you're African American, you go over here, and if you're white, you go over here, and if you're Hispanic, you go, that's bullshit. We can't afford those kind of artificial subdivisions anymore. We are under attack. We don't need three armies, we need one. Because we are stronger united than we are apart. It has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with discrimination, at least not within our own community. But it has everything to do with maximizing our political and cultural power to best ends. That's what it matters. And when you throw in and you say, oh, we're going to have an event that helps trans people get jobs, but then you throw in at the end for people of color, and say, well, you know, white folks, they can fend for themselves. That's what you're saying. What you should be aware that when you say for people of color, what you're really saying, and you may not like to hear this, but it is the truth. What you are saying when you say for people of color is you're saying whites not welcome. That's what you're saying. So if you want to do that, that's fine. But own it. And understand that the kind of racism that you decry, you are perpetrating. When you use that term, for no good reason. And I'm not saying there aren't good reasons for events that feature people of color, but there are also plenty that there's no good reason. All right, we are ready to go to our break. Mike is going to get Mara on the phone. We have got our good friend Jenny Slater with Run and Hide. We got 5 minutes, and then we will be back with Mara Kiesling. Stick around.
on.
We go to Russia, where a horrifying new video hit the internet this weekend documenting what appears to be a brutal attack on a Russian transgender woman by five men after she had been ambushed in a public park. The victim is repeatedly beaten and kicked all over her head and body while being dragged around the park for a few minutes. At one point, she's being dragged by her underwear, which you'll see in just a moment. The woman appears to escape towards the end of the video. As you can see, one of the men is actually rummaging through her purse while one bystander appears to be watching the entire attack, even if no attempt was made to stop it. Now, this video is sadly part of a disturbing trend emerging online since Russia passed its anti-gay propaganda legislation. On social media, Russian hate groups have been luring young LGBT individuals through the internet into real-life meetings. Now, once they're there, the self-proclaimed vigilantes beat, torture, and often humiliate the victims while filming the attack. And then they post the video on popular online sites, such as this video, which was posted on Russia's VKontakte. Now, that's the Russian equivalent of Facebook.
All right, we are back. It is the Rebecca Giro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And I believe we were having a little problem. We got Mara Kiesling. Are you on?
I sure am.
Oh, goody. Okay, we had a little issue there. Hopefully, I don't know, maybe the snow's playing games with our cell connection or something. Anyway, thanks, Mara, for coming on. And, of course, everybody knows Mara Kiesling is the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality and a friend of the show and somebody who comes on all the time to talk with us. And the first thing I want to get into with you, Mara, is I want to talk about ENDA, because we haven't had you on since the Senate vote. We haven't had you on. And one of the things that I was personally being told, and everybody was being told, was that the Senate vote was the first part of an effort to get ENDA through the Congress and to the president's desk. And in fact, when I was at Netroots Nation last year, I got a chance to speak to Senator Jeff Merkley and asked him that question. And here's what he responded to me when I asked him the question. Oh, that's not it, Mike.
One of the things you've been incredibly optimistic about this, yet we see in the House they're going after very anti-LGBT, and I was wondering if you could explain where your optimism comes from, because it seems like there's not a lot of reason for optimism, at least as far as the House.
Here's why I'm so excited. I'm counting the momentum from the Senate carrying over into the House, but I think we have a chance for a very significant bipartisan majority in the Senate. We have more sponsors than we ever have had. We have folks who are just understanding that if you don't have a fair shot at a job, there is no equality under the Constitution. There is no opportunity to live the American dream. And that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable in our constitutional sense. It's unacceptable in terms of fairness and justice. And so I just feel like the country has moved and we're going to get it done.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, I mean, that sounds like a pretty strong statement, Mara, but what I think we saw was once it made it through the Senate with 10 Republicans, which was very encouraging, all of a sudden they pivoted to immigration. It was like, ENDA? What ENDA? We weren't talking about ENDA, which seems rather reminiscent of 2009. And I'm wondering, how do we take this? I mean, what are we supposed to believe now?
Well, I mean, you can believe whatever you want. I feel the exact same way about it as I did then. You know, I think it was always going to be harder in the House. I mean, the House is run by people who don't want to help us out and who have, you know, their right wing, you know, who just hates us.
Absolutely, but my concern here
we've never
is that
had a clear,
I'm sorry, continue.
Obvious path through the House. Yeah. Now that being said, I think we're putting up a phenomenally good game, And if it's possible to get done this year, and there's, you know, honestly some disagreement about that, but if it is, we're doing everything right. The same campaign that was mounted to get it through the Senate so strongly, the coalition that we are a part of called Americans for Workplace Opportunity, you know, that put millions of dollars towards it, hired something like 20 organizers for the Senate campaigns, and clearly got the work done beyond all of our expectations, is now geared up to do the same thing in the House. We're hiring organizers in 38 House districts. Some of the districts are getting two organizers, some are just getting one. But it's a real genuine effort to gin up quality visits and all sorts of quantity and background noise. You know, we're never going to get, you know, there's 100 or 200 folks we're never going to get in the House. What we have to do is win over enough of the others to make it untenable for the Republican leadership to not run the bill. They don't want to run it, and we've always known they didn't want to run it.
Right, and I think we've always known that. But there's another issue there with, you know, you ask yourself, well, why does Jay Carney still believe that we can magically, you know, the end of fairy is going to sprinkle magic dust on John Boehner and he's going to do a 180 on this stuff, which is what they've been trying to argue since, you know, the end of the 111th Congress, which, of course, was the first Congress when Democrats controlled both houses and the White House, when theoretically it had a much better chance of actually becoming law. And basically, Democrats just sat on their hands and said, "Enda, what Enda? We really meant hate crimes." You know, it just seems to me. Please straighten me out on this. It just seems to me like we're replaying that same story again.
No, not at all, not at all. We actually had a much better chance of passing it in the House in 2010, right?
Yeah, well, 2009, 2010 was the 111.
Yeah, it was so I think we had a slightly better chance then than we do now. I think 2010 didn't go well. And I think a lot of that had to do with a lot of different things. I mean, it was things like, you know, Barney Frank, legitimately, I'm not dissing Barney for this, but he was very distracted by Dodd-Frank, which as the chairperson of the Financial Services Committee was his baby. And was that annoying to me? Sure. And then Congress went all off on the Affordable Care Act and got distracted with that for a while. And then Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you know, appeared at the last minute because, and this is where I disagreed with most of the rest of the movement and with our allies in Congress, you know, they felt that Don't Ask, Don't Tell had a better shot of getting to the Senate, which is probably true. But my attitude was, well, so what? We run both. And, you know, we couldn't prevail in that. This time, we're doing everything possible. And I don't care what Jay Carney thinks about him. I don't care what the president, the White House is irrelevant. Nobody is asking the White House to do more on ENDA than they are doing. Nobody is sitting on Capitol Hill saying, oh, I wonder where the president is on ENDA. We don't want the president speaking more about ENDA. I can't stress that enough. And people keep saying, why isn't the president talking about ENDA? We don't want him to. What good would that do us for the president to say, hey, you people with Obama derangement syndrome, here's another thing I want that you can get in the way of. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. Jay Carney doesn't matter to ENDA right now. The White House doesn't matter. The president doesn't matter. When we need them, they will absolutely be there as they were on the Senate vote. But it's not going to be them making a lot of noise because it wouldn't help us.
Okay, but here's the other thing. And this is, you know, if it's going to be Congress, but I mean, I witnessed this with my own eyes. When Nancy Pelosi spoke in front of a group of progressive activists at Netroots Nation last year in California, I was in the room, and I watched her say something that I find, frankly, unbelievable. That I don't know where she comes up with this stuff, where she says, why didn't we go for ENDA in 2009? Because that's what the community said they want, that the community said that they wanted don't ask, don't tell, and hate crimes. And I'm saying, you know what? I've been paying attention to what this community wants for a long time. And I don't know what community she's talking about, because it certainly isn't the one that I've been engaging with for the last decade or so. I mean, where does she get the idea that people want an essentially useless hate crimes bill that helps no one? It just punishes maybe two or three criminals every decade, and as a trade-off for a 40-year workplace rights effort. I don't see how she gets to that logic. I just don't.
Well, I first of all, I think when she says community, she means movement.
I think she means the human rights campaign, honestly. I think that's what she means. I think she means really wealthy.
I think
wealthy.
There's some element of that.
Yeah.
But first of all, the hate crimes bill always is going to go before ENDA. That has been the strategy for a million years. And the thinking was you couldn't get Congress to say don't fire you if you couldn't get them to say don't kill you. It is not by any means a useless bill. The prosecution of individual hate crime perpetrators was never the point. It was never the point of the whole thing. The law that it was amending only impacted in terms of race and religion and other categories something like 7 to 8 cases a year. So we knew LGBT people were going to be 1 or less cases a year. That was never what it was about. What we've gotten out of it is tremendously important. We have the FBI training itself. All FBI agents now have been trained on trans issues. The Community Relations Service at the Department of Justice now goes on site when there are trans hate crimes to help mediate, to help provide resources. And the Community Relations Service has also now working with a lot of trans activists and very friendly police officers around the country has created a training module that is going to all police departments in the country. Those are really big deals. And by getting that law passed, we also showed all those scaredy cat members of Congress that they could do it. Nobody would lose a vote over it.
Right.
And so passing the hate crimes bill was really important. Now, why Don't Ask, Don't Tell went first? That's not where my beef is. My beef is that they both should have gone. And I think people were probably right that Don't Ask, Don't Tell had a better shot of getting through the Senate. But I think ENDA would have gotten through the Senate too.
Yeah, I do too. Because I mean, I don't see how there makes much of an argument here. It makes sense to say, you know, we're going to protect these soldiers here who are going off to fight for our country, and that's all well and good. But what about, you know, I mean, nobody cares about the families they leave behind. I mean, and my question that I've been asking on this show for a while now is if you had asked before you passed that bill, if you had gone to those soldiers that would have been affected and said, would you rather get your rights today, or would you rather that first we protect the families that you leave behind when you go to fight for our country? I think we all know what they would have said. You know what I mean? Based on the heroism and the selflessness of the people in the military, I don't think we need polling to answer that one. I mean, am I wrong?
I have no idea.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
Sorry, I don't have an idea. But anyway, so we're doing everything right this Congress. And I think what happened in the Senate should show people that. We collectively have never done a campaign like what's done with the Americans for Workplace Opportunity last year. We won every one of our target senators. And, you know, we now have in the House 202 co-sponsors. The highest it ever got to was 205 in 2010, and that was with 35 more Democrats in the House than there are now. So we're down 3 co-sponsors with 35 less Democrats in the House. That's really huge progress. And if you watch the Senate vote and the days leading up to it, there was nobody who said anything disrespectful. The senator from Indiana, Burton, you know, went on and on wrongly about religious freedom. But he didn't say anything disrespectful. No, everybody knows you can't do that anymore. Nobody brought up bathrooms in the Senate. Nobody brought up trans teachers. And we won. And we won huge. And we won with far more Republicans than we thought we'd get, or well, we hoped we'd get, but we didn't know we'd get them all.
Yeah. You know,
and we're going after it in the House. But in the House, we have a very hostile leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to basically figure out how to run around them or jam it down their throats.
Right. And you know, that's where I'm running into trouble with the Democratic Party, because it doesn't seem like, you know, now they've got the Senate victory, which we were told, yeah, this is going to create the kind of momentum, like we heard Senator Merkley say at the top. And it just seems like, you know, now when we say, well, okay, Nancy Pelosi, here you go, we get nothing. I mean, it's not a statement, not an effort of any sort. It seems like they just said, okay, we're done with that. Now we're going to talk about immigration. And so I'm forced to ask, if they were serious about this, why aren't we seeing something? Do you know what I'm saying?
What do you want to see besides 202 co-sponsors signed on? How do you think that happened? I didn't do that. I mean, I think NCC helped, but Nancy Pelosi and Congressman Jared Polis and Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton and some more really good folks, I don't want to name them and forget some, but, you know, they were going, and Nancy Pelosi, I sat in a meeting with Nancy Pelosi going over targets and her making calls and her strong-arming, not strong-arming people, but bending elbows, whatever it's called. Our problem in passing ENDA this year is not a Democratic problem. Almost every single Democrat is a co-sponsor. I think we have two or three who aren't, or five who aren't, something like that. The Democratic Party is not our ENDA problem.
Mr. Boehner on this. If we're that strong and it's that sure of a win, why isn't Nancy Pelosi and the House leadership making more of an effort to see this bill come up for a vote? That's the question I can't help but ask.
Well, first of all, because Nancy Pelosi didn't call you doesn't mean that there's not an effort underway. I don't know what you want anybody to say.
Well, but that's the thing. When we've seen efforts on other issues in the past, we have seen what they do. We see them go on MSNBC. We see them promote these things publicly in the newspapers and other media. And I'm not seeing that. That's what we've seen what it looks like when Democrats get serious about an issue. And this is not what it normally looks like to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I just, this isn't. Everything is going, with the exception of there being a leadership in the House that doesn't want this to ever come up, everything is going the way we need it to right now. If we had a very specific strategy, we wouldn't do like what happened last year when people started talking about, you know, demanding a specific strategy. Even if that had been a strategy, we wouldn't be talking about it publicly a year in advance. It just isn't how this stuff works. ENDA is going to get done when we can convince the House leadership that it's too costly not to. And that process is underway.
There's another thing I wanted to ask you about, Mara, because you do a lot of these shows on MSNBC and CNN and other networks, and even Fox, I know you've been on. This week, just recently, we had an appearance by Janet Mock, who's got a new book out. She was on this show about 6 months ago, and she was on Piers Morgan. And he basically, as people remember, he put out a what they call them, on the crawl, on the screen below her face as they were showing her, things like lived as a boy till 18, formerly a man, things like that, and basically called her a man on television. I'm curious. You've done this. You've dealt with these folks. You know the people behind the people behind the cameras also have an impact here. It's not just about the host. What do you think went on here, and who do you think is right here?
Well, so...
I mean, was Janet right to be offended, do you think?
Well, what Janet is doing is very important, but very complicated.
Yes.
She's trying to entirely change the paradigm of how the media, among other things, she's trying to change how the media treats, not trans guests. I'm not sure she really cares. It's not about how she was treated, I think she would say. It's about how trans people were treated during that show, with mm-hmm. her being the specific trans person. But I don't think for Janet it was about Janet. What she's trying to do is so important and very, very complicated, and it's going to be hard. But, I don't think, I mean, clearly I thought Janet was more right than Piers Morgan, but Piers Morgan got caught in a paradigm shift. He didn't know the paradigm was shifting. What Janet is saying is great and correct, and it's stop treating us like we're this one-dimensional transitional moment or surgery moment and start treating us like people.
Yeah.
And that's great. The problem for Piers Morgan is that's how they've all done it. Piers Morgan is not the first person to do that. Almost nobody has not done that.
Yeah.
So he happened to do it at the moment where we're going, where we collectively are trying to change that paradigm. So it's the same thing with Katie Couric. I'll tell you, if I had to say, if I had to be critical of one entity in this, it would actually be all of the folks who have now turned all of their hate on Piers Morgan and Katie Couric. They are not the problem. The problem is the paradigm. The problem is how the media treats us. I think Piers Morgan screwed up during those interviews. I think Katie Couric screwed up during her interviews. But they weren't really doing anything that a million news people had done before.
Granted, but the argument that I made, and I think a lot of people made, was they should have done their homework. They should have made more of an effort. They should have picked the phone and called GLAAD or NCTE or any one of a dozen other organizations that could have helped them get it right.
Well, sure, but they didn't, and nobody else ever had before either. Not nobody else. But what all Piers Morgan and Katie Couric did, and I'm not trying to defend them. What I'm trying to say is, they stepped in it because things are changing now. We're not going to put up with that crap anymore.
Yeah.
They were the ones who got bit by it. And by the way, they were the ones who got bit by it because they were trying to do well. They were trying to have a good conversation and help spread the word. So, I think they have to get a couple points for that. But they screwed up. In the case of Katie Couric, Laverne called her out. And by the way, has since said, hey, everybody, it was a great educational moment. Stop hating on Katie Couric.
Right, but my
issue
was... I
don't want to put words in her mouth. But now,
right.
to the rest of their careers, there are going to be some trans people who will say, oh, Katie Couric, she's very transphobic. Which isn't what happened at all. And people will be saying, and yes, Piers Morgan has always been a pompous person.
Yeah. Yes.
But there are some trans people who for the rest of their lives will say, oh, Piers Morgan, he's very problematic. He's transphobic. We need to get to the point where we're nicer, where we understand that
that's the key
when
point,
when we win people over, we should embrace them. We shouldn't attack them forever. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was the key point with Piers Morgan, to me, and I wrote about this, I don't know if you read my article, but the key point was, you can think whatever you want, But the reality was the way that they that Piers Morgan treated her, treated Janet, was disrespectful and would have been disrespectful in the case of any woman who was on his show. What woman wants to be called a man? I mean, just common respect would have guided him to the to not make that mistake. I mean, forget about the trans thing. Just simply being polite and respectful to a woman, period, he wouldn't have run into that trouble, I don't think.
But yeah, I think you're not hearing me right. I'm really not trying to defend what he did. I think he was a total jerky jerk face. But the context in which he was doing it and the context we are in now, I mean, in some ways we should be thankful that he did that when he did it to whom he did it. Because Janet was willing to have the spine to stand up and say, whoa, wait a minute, you know, back off. Let me explain this to you. And we can fight over whether she should have had to explain it to him, but that's not useful. You know, there's still a lot of people who watch that show in America who are saying, I don't know what happened. Because it's a very complicated thing that Janet and really lots of folks are now trying to do, and not everybody's going to get that right away. And we need to stop focusing on Piers Morgan. He screwed up. Janet educated him. Forget Piers Morgan. Let him go. He is not the problem. He was a problem for one little moment. The problem is now the other million newscasters who are still going to act the way they've always acted, which is all Katie Couric and Piers Morgan were doing. All of America, the first question they ask trans people is, have you had the surgery? You know, when did you, yeah. you know, oh, when yeah. did you start living as a woman? Right. Piers Morgan didn't actually do anything new.
True. True.
What was new and revolutionary is what Janet was doing. And thank God she did it.
Absolutely. You know, I have to say, I mean, I think we're damn lucky that we have somebody who's so well-spoken, so personable, and so telegenic, who's willing to go out and do this stuff. Because, frankly, I don't know that somebody who looks like me is going to get that call to appear on television. But somebody who, fortunately, is so capable as Janet and is getting those calls is out there. And I think that's great, you know. So on that respect. Listen, Mara, we're almost out of time, but I want to hit you up with one more question about the executive order. And this was a little puzzling to me. You mentioned, you know, who cares what Jay Carney says? He's still calling this hypothetical.
No. I said, who cares what he says about Endo?
Right. Okay. Jay Carney is still calling the executive order hypothetical, but Shin-Inui, who works for another part of the administration, is saying that it's under consideration. So, I mean, it's getting kind of confusing because it seems like in the Obama administration, as far as this executive order goes, right hand doesn't know what left hand is doing.
Wait, that's under consideration and whatever in process, whatever, they're the same thing. They just meant it's been under consideration now for 5 years.
Yeah.
There is nothing there. There's nothing between what Jay Carney and Shin said. They both were saying the same thing. They were saying, stop asking me this question.
Yeah, okay. Which is another confidence builder, you know. So.
This is not the left hand not knowing what the right hand can do. I mean, I think, you know, everybody at the White House knows exactly what's going on with the executive order. And, you know, so far they're not giving it to us. And, you know, it's one of these stupid things that...
Yeah, and so do you?
There's no
do
real
you
reason
think,
for it anymore. They're not.
Do you think there's reason to have hope that this is going to resolve itself? That this order actually will come sometime during Obama's last few years, or is this just forget it? It's just a campaign promise. He never had any intention of keeping anyway. So let's just focus on Enda because this is not happening.
You know, I think it will happen. For the life of me, think it's dumb that it hasn't happened so far, and I can't figure out what the thinking is. I mean, the thinking has probably been different at different times. Like, thinking about it was probably different before the election than it is right after the election than it is right now. And it just does, it's, it's dumb. They ought to just do it. But, you know, folks are acting like it's, you know, the biggest part of the agenda. And while it's important, I mean, very important, you know, we're also on the brink of getting, you know, total anti-discrimination in the healthcare system. We're, you know, on the brink of winning the elimination of surgery exclusions from all public healthcare plans. We're, you know, we're solidifying anti-discrimination in education. These are all really, really big things.
Oh, yeah.
And I think all of us are going to keep pressuring the White House on this executive order. But, you know, we can't let the executive order become like marriage and overtake the movement and us educate the public that that's all we need. Or worse,
right.
Educate the administration that that's all we want and need.
Right.
I think
but,
we'll get it, but
would you...
I think the White House has handled it so badly.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I just don't know what the heck is going on with that.
I mean, I have to tell you, when I watched the president come out for his State of the Union and go through this whole thing with, you know, if Congress doesn't act, I will again. You know, we're going to do executive orders on this and we're going to change the minimum wage and we're going to do that. And it was like, I couldn't help it. I'm sitting there. Yeah. Everything, you're going to fix everything except us. Us, you're not going to, that, you know, an executive order, it's good enough for everybody else, but it's not good enough for us. And I can't believe I'm the only trans person
who feels
a little miffed about that.
I think that was a good sign in the State of the Union. You know, I think they've done one executive order since then. It's not like they've done everything for everybody. You know, there's the disability rights community has been trying to get a specific executive order now for something like 12 years. And they don't have it yet. It's not like everybody's getting everything to us. In fact, you know, LGBT people, and especially trans people, have been winning more than any other community in this administration. And, you know, we're going to get this executive order almost definitely. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I think the president's statement in the State of the Union, you know, I think that helps us. I mean, it's certainly a tool we've all gone and flogged over at the White House and said, hey, look at this. What does this mean? And, you know, do this. I think it helps us. But, you know, we legitimately have to prove our case on everything at the White House.
Yeah.
And you know, frankly, as a good government person, I'm okay with that. I don't want them to do whatever any interest group says. I want the interest group to have to show what the problem is, show the solution, and prove they're right.
Yeah,
I think we've done that with the executive order, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think we did that long ago, and this is just some little trap they've talked themselves into. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and then, you know, you wonder how they figure that this is going to play when they turn around in 3, 4, 5 months from now and come to the LGBT community as a whole and say, we're on your side, give us money. And people are going to look at them and say, well, yeah, you know, you gave us these little things, but, you know, the big stuff that we've been waiting for 5 years, where is it? And people like myself are going to say, you know what, maybe if I have any money to donate, I'm going to donate to a progressive candidate who I believe in, who's running against one of those entrenched politicians who seems unwilling to stand up for my civil rights. That's where my money is going to go, you know, because it's like if I give money to the Democratic Party, what do I get? I get the same thing every time. I get nothing. I get no progress. So why am I going to put my what limited funds I might have into a political party that doesn't seem to want to, you know, I mean, we're waiting to see those cojones, and we're not. You know what I'm saying?
Becky, I just think saying that we've gotten nothing big out of this administration is just beyond ridiculous.
No, I agree. But not nothing. But you know what? The biggest of the big, the workplace rights, the 40-year fight that we've had, I mean, that stuff, I see
so
the
much
list, you know.
Right.
No,
how do you think we got the EEOC?
In
we got
the
EEOC
ACA.
Ruling because of a specific set of appointments that were made. We now have federal employee protections. You know, I'm very confident we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing. we have OPM doing a manual on transitioning in the workplace, which may sound like a little thing, but it's become the standard even in industry, but all across the federal government. We at MCP have done training of all of the EEOC investigators. We've done training at three or four other agencies, and there's two more that we're about to do. You know, these are all the people who enforce these laws, and they're now enforcing them the way we want them to enforce them, and that's a really, really big deal. And, you know, I think in the next very, very short while, we're going to get clarification that Title IX educational anti-discrimination laws cover trans people. You know, and we're going to get additional clarification on the housing laws and a lot more on health care. And, you know, a lot of these things just take so painfully long, but we're getting them.
Okay.
You know, and I'll call the White House out on the executive order all day long because I think, you know, they've acted weird and moronic on that. But, you know, on so many other things, you know, they are acting responsibly and they are very much acting in our favor.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just wish that, you know, maybe it's best that we don't, but nevertheless, I think I'm not alone in feeling like, you know, it would be nice if every time the president spoke on, you know, issues like that, on civil rights and protections, that I didn't always, every time I hear this guy speak, feel like he's not talking about me. You know what I mean? That I feel excluded.
No, I do hear that, and I do hear that. But I also know that you have just been anti-Obama from the very beginning, from before he was elected.
No, I'm anti not keeping promises. I was actually a big Obama supporter in 2008, and I supported him early on before and against Hillary Clinton because I believed he was the better choice because he was more willing to address our issues than she was. But now, I've become soured on Obama over the last 5 years of waiting and hoping and getting nothing, you know, or shall we say, far less than we were led to believe. Let's put it that way. I thought by now we'd be celebrating the 5-year anniversary of ENDA with Obama. You know, he's been a colossal letdown.
The president has almost nothing to do with it. But the president has almost nothing to do with ENDA.
I think he could have been more proactive, used his bully pulpit a little bit better early on.
The president has done every single thing we've asked him to on ENDA.
But I'm just saying, I think that if there was more from the White House and more from the Democrats in Congress on back when this was doable. I mean, we know. I mean, they refused to share their whip counts with us, and our activists did them. And we know that if they had put on the kind of an effort that we saw in the Senate last year, we probably could have pulled that out. But they just didn't do it. And then they wonder why we don't take them seriously when they come back and say, we're fighting for you. And we say,
but you're not,
really?
You're not talking about the White House anymore. You're not talking about Democrats in Congress.
But I am. I mean, this was something that could have been done if Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi had gotten their members together and made, was it guaranteed? No, of course, nothing is guaranteed. But as you said earlier, there was a much better chance than there is today. And you know it would have gotten a vote in both houses if the leadership had been willing to do it. But yet neither of our Democratic leaders were willing to bring the bill up for a vote. And I think that says something.
I think
it says something.
And I think the people in the movement, including me, you know, bumbled it. But I don't think you're talking about the White House here at all. The White House was not part of the problem there.
Well, only in the sense that I think the president could have put more pressure, to put it as he phrased it in an op-ed to LGBT media, to use the weight of his administration to see it passed into law. I think the time to do that was 2009, and he sat on his hands and remained silent while it just went down in flames. And I don't think that is a reason to have confidence in any politician. He had an opportunity, just as the Democrats had it, and they squandered it.
I think he's, anyway, I think he's dead wrong. It was right after health care reform passed. I mean, there was no way Endo was ever going to run before the health care bill passed. Yeah. And by the way, the health care bill is one of the most important things that's happened to trans people in the history of the country. I mean, the Affordable Care Act is really, really an important trans thing that we're going to understand better and better over the next few years. So Endo was never going to run before that. It was never going to run before Dodd-Frank. It is a specific bill for a specific population, and both of those things were broader and honestly bigger. And so we were never going to get in front of those. And then once they happened, you know, the Republicans in Washington just so turned on anything having to do with the president, he wouldn't have wanted the president talking about Endo. And people, you keep saying he hasn't used his bully pulpit. Him using the bully pulpit on Endo would kill Endo.
Okay.
I can't say that enough. We do not want the president out there yakking about Endo all the time and making it a public priority because it would not help Endo.
Okay, fair enough. But how does that explain Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, neither one bringing it up for a vote? I mean, surely they could have done that. Harry Reid could have done exactly the same thing he did in the Senate and put pressure, which is what he did successfully this year. I mean,
I believe that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi screwed up in 2010. I believe that I screwed up in 2010. And there was, you know, one point that, you know, there's one point that I regret that I wrote about at the time. And, you know, I don't think I have all that much power in D.C. by any means, but I think there was a specific point at which the movement changed the course of how that could have gone, and we could have done it better and differently. And, you know, I feel bad about that. But, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Benny Hoyer, who was the majority leader at the time and now the minority whip, you know, I think they could have done better by us. But honestly, I think we could have done better, too.
All right. Well, fair enough. Hey, Mara, we're, like, way over what we normally do, so we're going to say goodnight. But I hope you'll come on again because I think this year is going to be very interesting, and we're going to want to keep up with you and NCT and talk politics and all kinds of good stuff.
Wonderful.
All right.
Becky.
Thanks again.
See you, Mike. Yep. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye. Oh, my goodness. I love Mara, and she's so good. And that's why we're way over where our break is. But Mara is so good, and I love having her on, and she's such a good conversation that I just lose track of time. And, you know, I hope you'll forgive us. We are going to go to a break right now because your host needs to use the little girl's room. And we will be back in about 5 minutes.
We're talking about some real sick stuff here. Man on man, hairy baby, BDSM, bottoms acting like tops, tops acting like bottoms. Just the whole world gone topsy-turvy.
You won.
From bottom of my heart.
Well, there you go, Becky. There are no gays in Sochi. Not a single one. Not any.
Not even Johnny Weir.
Oh, well, maybe he would be an exception.
Oh, my God. That guy is just a...
What is his problem? Self-loathing, seems like.
He's such a poo-poo. Oh, who cares? You know, I love people, so I should, everybody should come to Sochi and just ignore it.
Well, he has a Russian boyfriend, I'm given to understand, but I'm not sure why his point of view would be so skewed. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, did you see when he went on... Keith Olbermann. Now, Keith Olbermann, of course, is now doing a show on ESPN, the sports network.
Yeah.
And he was on, and it was a clip that was online. You could probably dig this up if you want to take a look. Mm-hmm. And he went on Keith Olbermann in a Russian military outfit.
What? I mean,
it was ridiculous. Yes, no, I'm not kidding. Okay, was wearing like this Russian military style jacket with little ribbons on it and the whole thing. It's like, what are you, stupid, dude?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I've never experienced any discrimination. It's like, yeah, okay, Mr. Rich Guy Ice Skater. It's so nice that
you haven't
been beaten.
He doesn't live in Russia. How does
he
know?
That's the point. But that's his argument. Well, it never happened to me, so therefore it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such a putz.
Well, he's a clueless little gay man.
He
Surprise.
Really is. He's such... He, you know what he is?
Well,
he is every bad stereotype of gay men there is, all wrapped up into one guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is. I mean, every, self-serving, selfish, self-involved, all these terrible stereotypes, he exhibits all of them. I think he does more damage to the image of LGBT people just by showing up on television than probably any other single factor. I mean, he makes us look bad. And I don't mean just gay men. I mean just LGBT people and everyone who's queer, everybody. I think we all suffer. Every time this jerk opens his mouth, we suffer for it. I really do. I really think.
Well, Rush is wonderful, and the toilets work perfectly well. Don't you ever say otherwise.
Just don't lock yourself in. Or you may not get back out. I mean, oh my goodness. Well, all right. Let's talk some issues here. Hang on a second. I was all prepped and I never bothered to bring up the right board because I was so worried about making sure we did a good interview with Mara that I didn't need that.
Yeah,
and
that
I just never bothered to put it up. So now I'm going to put up the right board and figure out what
Mara is always one of my very favorite guests that you have, and I will say that she is kind of the counter to you in some ways.
I
love it when you two are
when
you two are kind of arguing about stuff. That's entertaining to me, and I like to listen to that, and it works out rather well. I like that. That's a good part of your show when Mara's on there.
I love that she's able that she challenges me. I love that she calls me out when I make a mistake. That's what I want. I mean, I'm not right all the time. I'm under no illusions. I don't, I have opinions. They're honestly held. Occasionally they're wrong. I mean, I'm a human being too, Most of all, what I hope to do with this show is encourage people to think for themselves, tell you what I think, but you know what? Make up your own mind. And I wish some of you guys would call in when you hear something that you want to challenge, that you don't think I'm right on, that you want to call me out on, or you just want to voice your view. We do have an open studio call line, and when we don't have a guest on, it is open for calls, 928-277-4921. Okay? As long as we don't have a guest, you can get in, and you will go right to us, and we will put you on the air. We don't need your whole name. We don't need your street address. What we would like is whatever name you go by that you would like to present yourself under, whatever name that happens to be. We don't need your last name. Your first name. And if you want to tell us where you're from in the country, we would like to know that.
I have an itchy finger right here on the button. So
so call us.
Yeah.
Call me out. I mean, did Mara say anything you agree with or disagree with? Give us a call. Let us know what you're thinking, because this show isn't just about me. My name is on the door, but this show is about you guys. So help us out here. Come on now. Anyway, let's get into, there was a few things that went on this week. One, I thought this was really interesting. A Texas appeals court has ruled in favor of transgender widow Nikki Aragus. Now, Nikki Aragus, as you may remember, she was married to a firefighter in Texas, a firefighter who died. And the court, when she went to court, they refused to allow her husband's death benefits. because they said that she was, as far as the state of Texas was concerned, she was legally male. Therefore, her marriage was invalid and she was not a legal wife and was not entitled to anything. Well, guess what? The 13th District, this is, I think, federal, because 13th District Court of Appeals in Corpus Christi, so that sounds like a federal court to me, ruled today in favor of Nikki Araguz. They ruled that Texas must, check this out, recognize the marriages of transgender people. Holy shit. Now, I don't know, and this article does not, from the Dallas Voice, does not make clear if this is applicable to same-sex marriages as well. But what it says, according to Houston attorney Kent Rutter, who is the lead attorney on the appeal, he says that the opinion marks the first time in Texas that a court has recognized that trans people have the right to marry. What he said, quoting here, what the decision today says is Texas law now recognizes that in an individual who has had a sex change, of course, they don't define what that is, whether it's surgery or whether it's hormones or whether it's whatever, okay, but they are now ruling that an individual who has had a sex change is eligible to marry a person of the opposite sex. I think it's a significant victory for trans people in Texas. He also said that the ruling will result in further court proceedings to ensure that Araguz receives her late husband's death benefits. So this is not over. This is a major, major step forward for Texas in terms of recognizing transgender marriages. But it is not the end of this story. She does not collect yet. She still has a fight ahead of her. So, Nikki Araguz, if it means anything, we're on your side. We hope you win this one. Congratulations, and we hope to see more like that. So that's great. I'll read one more story because we took a late break. So, and then we'll go to our last break, and then we'll finish up. But here's something. Let's see. Hang on. Mr. Mike is sending me a secret message here. He's telling me you can do a break anytime if you want it.
That's the
and
secret message.
You know what? He's right. I can. It's nice to be the. It's good to be the host. It's good to be the queen. Let's just cover this one real quick, and maybe we'll take a break after I read it, and we'll come back and talk about it. There's a new Philadelphia policy, and I'll tell you from personal experience, this was needed very much. basically, what the Philadelphia Police Department did was they've announced a change in policy. This directive is called Directive 152. It's the first in the Philadelphia PD's history that addresses how officers are going to interact with the transgender community. The directive also addresses housing, transportation, and processing for transgender inmates. It's one of the few guidelines in the entire country to offer direction on how to speak to reporters about trans offenders or trans victims of crime. In cases where a trans victim has died, policy states officers should use pronouns and titles of respect appropriate to the individual's gender identity as expressed by the individual. In other words, she's a woman if she said so. If she lived as a woman, she was a woman. End of story. What's in her pants does not matter. Key point. Now, Charles Ramsey, who is the police commissioner in Philadelphia, has never been one of our big boosters. He says he hopes to alleviate the fear that in an unprecedented policy change. What he says was he acknowledged that his department was behind the times when it came to transgender policy. Behind the times? How about draconian? How about ancient? Got ridiculous, okay, to the point where cops would literally cruise around the street, and if they found a trans woman, they would harass her just for entertainment. I mean, literally, I watched it. I saw it happen, okay, with my own eyes. I watched it happen. Three trans women hanging out at a club down South Philly, and I watched, and I just happened to be, now, I was across the street. I was wearing a heavy coat at the time. I'm sure anybody who looked at me, they couldn't tell. I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't near the club. I was just another woman walking down the street. But I saw this, and I saw these three women outside this club, and they're just hanging out. They're talking to each other. Two of them were, I believe, sharing a cigarette, and it was not, at least I couldn't smell any pot or anything. I mean, I'm assuming it was a cigarette. It looked like a cigarette from where I was, but granted, I was across the street, so it was, I can't swear to that. Now, what happened was, I'm standing there, and I noticed these three women, and as I noticed these three women, I see a cop car come across the street and pull up by the club. Cops get out, and they start talking to these women. Now, at first, I'm across the street. I can't hear what's being said. It looks like they're just having a conversation. All of a sudden, one of the cops reaches over, grabs one of the women, spins her around, throws her up against the panel of the club that's like next to the door. Just throws her around, starts patting her down. Another cop grabs another one. As far as I could tell, now granted, I mean, there may have been something that was visible from closer up that I didn't see, but I did not see these women do or say anything that would have caused these police officers to consider them threats or risks. They threw them up against the wall, searched them, and then took two of them and put them in the back of the car, drove away. For what? To this day, I have no idea. They weren't soliciting. They weren't doing anything. They weren't doing anything except apparently talking to each other and having a cigarette. And yet, that's what they did. They showed up. They harassed them. They threw them in the car and drove off. That's what Philadelphia was like for trans women for a lot of years, including before Ramsey. And they've been coming under fire for this. It is well known in Philadelphia that if you are trans, your best bet, your smartest move in the city while you're in Philadelphia is to do everything possible to avoid the police, because any contact with the police is not going to turn out well for you, trans lady. That's the reputation that the Philadelphia Police Department has. And it has that reputation here in New Jersey, has that reputation in Philadelphia, has that reputation outside all the suburbs of Philadelphia. And I guess, finally, after decades of suffering this kind of reputation, that the Philadelphia Police Department has finally decided to do something about it. I mean, it's about goddamn time. You know, but the reality is fortunately for trans people, Philadelphia has a good mayor, a good guy who's genuinely concerned, who genuinely goes out of his way to make life easier. Unlike what New York City suffered with Mike Bloomberg, who said he'd sign a law to protect transgender people, but then didn't lift a finger to enforce it, or a New York City health department that still has the most draconian laws for changing transgender birth certificates in the entire country, at least not the only ones slightly less draconian than ones that forbid it altogether. I mean, it's bigotry from like the mid 20th century, you know, and of course it's in violation of New York City's own law. Not that they give a shit, you understand, but let's see if big shot progressive Bill de Blasio does anything about it. We're still waiting, you know. I've heard from activists in the New York area who I've communicated with, all believe that de Blasio is going to take it on, that they're going to deal with the trans birth certificate thing. But you know what? That's the same shit that they said when Bloomberg, oh, yeah, they're working on it. They're working on it. Don't worry. Well, you know, we waited 12 years and we got nothing. The guy who headed the New York City Health Department and said, well, we didn't do it, even though we were ordered by the city to do it because it was too hard. The guy who couldn't even bother that, you know, guy that incompetent, where does he go? Well, they really took it out on him for that. You know, they really showed him and you know, showed him the price of, you know, not serving your constituents. And you know what his punishment was? President Obama appointed him to become cabinet secretary and chair of the Center for Disease Control. Yeah, that's the way his career took a hit for failing to comply with the law regarding trans people in New York City, he was promoted into the White House to work with the president. What does that say? I mean, you know, so I'm still, again, New York activists I've spoken with are swearing up and down they think de Blasio is going to do something about this. Personally, my attitude is the same one I had before. I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I'm getting tired of being embarrassed to have been born in New York City. I really am. Can you guys please get your shit together so we can live our lives in peace? Really? I mean, for fuck's sake, you've got the most progressive mayor you've had in two generations. Do you think you can get this shit done now, please? All right. It is time for our final break. We have got Vibrolux with Barbie Doll. Sounds interesting. And we will catch you back in 5, gang, or even 4, maybe. It's the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have had an amazing show tonight, including the amazing Mara Kiesling. And I think she is amazing. I honestly do. I mean, I'm not just saying that because it's hyperbole. I mean, think about what this woman does. Okay. I mean, this woman is flying literally all over the country, going to talk, to educate. I mean, how valuable is that? You know, I mean, Mara is like, you know, she was saying how important Janet is, and she is, and she is. There's unquestionably Laverne Cox, Janet Mock, Chaz Bono, if and when he does anything. Yeah. But, you know, but somebody like Mara, who I think personally doesn't get probably half the credit that she's due. For all the work that she puts in. And I would point out that Mara is not an individual person. I mean, she does not do this on her own. She has an incredibly great team behind her. You know, just like I have an incredibly great producer behind me, she's got an incredibly great team behind her who makes her look great and helps her do her job as well as she can. And I think we're damn lucky that we have somebody like that, just like we're damn lucky we have somebody like Janet and we have somebody like Laverne Cox, and, you know, like I said, and Chaz Bono ever does anything to be the activist that he says he is, maybe him too. But, you know, honestly, I mean, I'm sure he's a good guy, but, well, he seems like he's a lot more concerned with his own life, and that's perfectly fair. I mean, if I was out couple of years when I was focused on myself too, so I don't begrudge him that in any way. But, you know, if you want to cast yourself as an activist, if you want to cast yourself as a voice of this community, if you want to cast yourself as a representative, well, then I think you need a little bit more. I think you need to be doing stuff. I think you need to be putting yourself out there so that you are. I mean, to be somebody like Janet, who is putting herself out there, be somebody like Laverne Cox, who is putting herself out there, even though it seems like I said earlier in the show, that Laverne Cox, or at least Laverne's Cox's publicist, doesn't seem to think that communicating directly with the community is as important as, clinking champagne glasses with the DC elites. And don't get me wrong, I'm not bashing creating change. I'm sure it's a nice convention, not something I go to, but that's, you know, but the truth is, I mean, these are the folks who are activists who have committed themselves to activism, and that's great. And they, and again, this is not a bash at Creating Change or any of the folks who attend Creating Change. It's not that, but I'm saying, yeah, it's important to me a presence and to speak at place at events like that. But you know what? It's important to speak to those of us who can't attend those kind of things because, A, if we can't afford it, and, yeah, there are scholarships available in a lot of cases. And, frankly, you know, you see one of the things that I have certainly benefited from is the generosity of sponsoring organizations that will allow a person like myself or who frankly can't afford these kind of trips to come and participate. I think I've mentioned on the show before, I got a scholarship to NetRoots. I got a scholarship to the convening. I am thrilled to be on the host committee. It's a way, I mean, granted, I mean, I have to say, if I'm to be completely honest, other folks are really doing the bulk of the work here. I am going to open a presentation. I'm going to talk for a couple of minutes to introduce somebody. But really, the hard work, the hardest work, the real work is being done by people like Bill Browning and Matt Foreman and other folks like that who are amazing. Matt Foreman is now working with the Haas Foundation, which is he was, of course, as many of you know, he's a well-known figure in our community. Matt Foreman was the executive director of the heck is the name of that organization? The Empire State Pride Agenda, New York's gay organization, when they actively excluded transgender people. Now, this is back in 2002, 12 years ago. They actively excluded transgender people and protections from the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act, which has now proven to have basically denied transgender people civil rights in New York in perpetuity, at least until we get so there's a governor there who's an actual progressive and just doesn't play one on TV. Because it seems like neither the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, nor his pet Democrats are particularly interested in standing up for the rights of their poorest and most vulnerable citizens. So I would suggest that those of you who are planning vacations this summer, driving vacations, if you are trans or you love someone who is, that you would avoid New York State, that you spend your money elsewhere, because not only don't they deserve it, but you will be at risk as a transgender person. You may not be able, you know, don't forget, in New York State, in this oh-so-progressive state, if you're not in New York City, where the prices for hotel rooms are astronomical, if you're in another area of New York, which isn't included in the handful of jurisdictions that protect all of their citizens instead of the politically popular ones, like they do in Albany, then you could be refused a hotel room. You could be refused a meal in a restaurant. You can be refused the use of a bathroom, and God help you, don't move there, because you could also be refused a job or even fired or thrown out of your apartment just because you're transgender. It's all perfectly legal in the oh-so-progressive state of New York. You might want to also avoid Massachusetts, where, you could possibly get a job there, and it would be illegal to fire you for being trans. But it's still legal to deny you a hotel room there. It's still legal to deny you a meal in a restaurant, a bathroom, So I would recommend those of you who are planning your summer vacations to avoid states like New York, New Hampshire, Maryland, because these states don't protect your civil rights. These states have chosen to allow you or the trans people that you care about to remain open targets for unrestricted bigotry towards them based on gender identity and expression. So I would recommend to you to avoid states like that and instead spend your money in places where, we protect that and we don't allow those kind of things. The Jersey Shore is great in the summer. They could certainly use the business. And we protect everyone. Rehoboth Beach down in Delaware. Well, you know, you can still, there's plenty of great places there. They protect everyone. You know, there are plenty of states, 16 or 17, I think it is now, where you can go, where there's many beautiful attractions to see and spend your money in a place where they want you there, where they don't send you the message that you're not welcome because your civil rights are not considered as equal to anyone else's. So my recommendation to you as you plan your summer vacations is to cross off states like New York and Maryland and Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and instead spend your money in New Jersey, spend your money in Delaware, spend your money in California or Oregon or Washington or any of the other states that protect and treat all their citizens as equal rather than who can afford to pay for their civil rights like a luxury product like they do in New York and these other states. I mean, seriously, I think that's what we need to do. I think we need to start punishing these states economically. They say, if you don't protect everyone, you don't deserve my money. You know, let's see what a few seasons of empty hotels in Provincetown say. You know, or the next time that they hold an LGBT event in New York, but nobody shows up. You know, let's see the kind of attention paid to discrimination against LGBT people right here at home that we're seeing people pay attention to in Sochi, Russia. You really want to do some good? We could use you right here. We can use you in New York. We can use you in Maryland. We can use you in Massachusetts. We can use you in New Hampshire. We can use you here at home. The Olympics will be over in a week. Our lives continue on. This is where we need you. We need you here at home. Get your heads out of the Olympics. You're not going to do anything. They're not going to give a shit. Nothing is going to change there. Here's where you want to make change. You want to create some change. Come here and do it. Here at home. At home where we need you. The United States is supposed to set an example. What kind of example are we setting? When we have 33 states where it's still legal to fire you, where transgender people have no rights, where in 29 states the same is true of gay people and lesbian people. And this is what you call an example? This is how you get a holier-than-thou attitude about Russia? Why? Because they're not openly beating the crap out of people. They're usually doing it behind closed doors, or they're not doing it physically. They're doing it by fiat, by discrimination, by denying people work, by denying people homes and jobs, you know. I mean, really, you know, what's the difference? You know what the difference between here and Russia is for a lot of people? Less blood. The cops aren't going to come to your house or drag you off the street for carrying a rainbow flag. They're just going to fire you because you look different. Yeah, what a big difference, huh? Yeah, we're so much better than those evil people in Russia, aren't we? Because, you know, instead of beating our people in the street like they do in Russia, we just beat them with paperwork and pummel them into submission and turn our backs on them as the police and other government agencies look the other way and our so-called leaders remain silent. Really? You want to do some good? Don't look over in Russia. look right here. We need you here. We need to work on what we've got going on. You know what? And I'm not saying that what's going on in Russia isn't worth concern. I'm not. I'm just saying, you know what? If you really want to do something, if you don't just want to piss into the wind, here's where you can have some effort. Putin is going to look at anything that you do and laugh at you. Yeah, all right, you may make some sponsors nervous, but that's about all you're going to do. If you think you're going to change anything in Russia, you're kidding yourself. I mean, after all we are victims of depraved morality, remember? They're not going to do anything. But stop focusing on Russia. Nothing's going to change there. Focus here. Help us create the example that gives us the moral high ground to criticize Russia. Because you know what? We don't have it. Right now, it does not exist. We do not have any moral high ground to lecture other countries on how to treat their LGBT citizens when we are doing such a shitty job right here at home. I am sorry. I am fed up with this crap. Okay, again, not saying that what's going on in Russia isn't worth attention, isn't worth our condemnation. But you know what? If you want to really be credible, clean up your own house. Don't turn around and say, isn't it awful, isn't it terrible going on in Russia? And then when people ask you to help and say, hey, we've got something going on here, you're too busy, you can't be bothered, you can't afford to donate this time. You know what? I'm sorry. I think that's hypocrisy. You know, I just do. I think we have no moral right to tell Russia or India or Uganda or any of these. Well, maybe Uganda, because Uganda is so ridiculous that it's just beyond the pale. Okay, but I mean, generally speaking, we have no moral high ground to stand on here. We treat our LGBT citizens like crap here. And we have a government that's more interested in making excuses for not doing anything than in actually doing anything. And you know what? Mara and I probably disagree on that a little bit. Okay? And I will acknowledge that, yes, there's just stuff has happened in the last 5 years. But not the stuff we need. Not the big stuff. Not the stuff that really will change people's lives. And even Mara, who is one of the most even-minded, even-tempered, not prone to hyperbole, very grounded kind of person, analytical thinker, even she can't get what the fuck the president and the White House are doing with this executive order. Where is the logic? And you have a president who treats us like that. And then you wonder why nobody trusts these people anymore. I mean, really, it's so damned frustrating. You see, that's the part of it that bothers me. And you know, I understand Mara's like, who cares what Jay Carney says? And I can even appreciate that she says that we shouldn't be asking Obama to stick up for this. And you know what? I don't know if I agree. Because I've been thinking about this. Since Mara we signed off with Mara a while back. I'm not sure I agree with this. You know, I mean... You know, everybody's saying, oh, it'll hurt the bill, it'll do that. Well, you know, Obama certainly didn't have any problem coming out in favor of the hate crimes bill. Certainly didn't have any problem coming out in favor of don't ask, don't tell. He certainly didn't have any problem coming out in favor of gay marriage. He's spoken on these issues over and over and over. And yet, when it comes to trans workers, when it comes to LGBT workers, he can't... I mean, I don't understand why, and maybe I should have asked Mara, but we ran long and, well, okay, blame me for that. But, you know, I can't understand why is it okay to cover gay marriage, to talk about gay marriage. It's okay to talk about all these different other different issues without a political risk, but yet somehow with our rights, which let's not forget, we just passed the Senate in November with 10 Republicans signing on, and we've got all this massive support. And it sounds like people are on one hand are saying, yeah, we've got all this support, we've got all this momentum, and then you look over at Congress and they're like, oh, so what are you doing about this? Huh? What? Us? Oh, you wanted us to do something? All right. All right. Anyway, okay, it looks like we are, oh my God, we are out of time. Where does it go, Mr. Mike? Now, I want to remind everybody that we will repeat the entire show in about 3 minutes after a lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike. And you can catch the Mara interview. And, of course, we'll have everything up when Mr. Mike posts it. I will post on Facebook when the entire show is available as a podcast. And next week, we will be live. We will be missing the week after that, but we will be live next week. Don't know who the guest is yet, but got a few things in the fire, so I'll let you know. Okay, stay safe, stay warm, and we'll catch you all next week, everybody. Have a good night. Show people!